We are just a hair over 24 hours away from Selection Sunday until the brackets are unveiled. It's conference tournament season, and we are in the thick of the best part of the sports calendar. Welcome into Courtside of the Camel Kadazovic. I'm Elijah Campbell. Here in snowy Nashville, where in the middle of March, we got about 3 inches of snow. And Michelle Kadazovic in Tampa, Florida right now, live from the SEC tournament. Michelle, I'm sure you are enjoying your weather situation a lot more than we are here up north.
Okay, well, actually today it is a little rainy, but listen, I will take that any day over the snow. Mm-hmm. Got a nice walk in this morning. I'm in St. Pete's, which is right across the bridge. Got to see Dad last night, and right after the show, we're jetting over to the arena. I'm so excited. And my dad's best friend from college actually lives down here in Tampa as well. And his wife went to Kentucky. So we are going to have a whole squad. I am pumped for today. It was stressful getting here. Long plane ride, long travel day. But I am in Tampa, Florida and ready. I was a little nervous last night, Elijah. I needed it to be Tennessee, Kentucky today.
Yes, we had been robbed if we didn't get Tennessee Kentucky part three, and we're definitely going to break down that matchup a lot today because that's the game of the day here in the SEC. I know Texas A&M Arkansas has some interesting storylines because those two teams split during the season, and Texas A&M making a miraculous run right now, and we'll get to that in the segment. But the game between Vanderbilt and Kentucky last night, I kind of wanted to lead off with that because Vanderbilt 11.5-point underdogs kept it to 6. And really had a chance, should have had the lead going into halftime. A big 6-point swing towards the end of the half kind of doomed them a little bit. But then they got up 7 in the second half. They just couldn't keep Kentucky off the boards like almost any team in college basketball. And they weren't able to make enough shots towards the end to be able to hang in there and win that game. But, I mean, if this tournament so far has taught us anything, it's that Vanderbilt has made significant progress. And they're going to end the season with a winning season or winning record. And that's assuming they don't have any other postseason play. The NIT might come knocking after their win against Alabama. They might not. But, Michelle, when you watch that game last night, you really get a good look as to how Vanderbilt progressed throughout the season. And now, Vanderbilt played Kentucky pretty well in the first two meetings in general. But if you would have told me that they would have had all these injury problems, they wouldn't have had the full team healthy until the last month of the season, and they were able to take Kentucky down to the wire, beat Alabama in the conference tournament, and absolutely handle Georgia, take care of business like they should against Georgia, then I would have called this season a success given what you were faced with at the beginning of the year.
Elijah, I completely agree. First off, I think this just says a lot about Vanderbilt in general. I mean, here's a team, like you said, just a couple of years ago, wasn't even able to win one game in the
SEC. Worst team in conference history.
And this year is the most competitive that the SEC has been. So it says even more. This is, I would say, probably ever, this is the most competitive SEC basketball has been. You're probably going to have 5 or 6 teams in the tournament this year. These top 4 teams have all been ranked in the top 25 around the country, pretty much, I mean, consistently throughout the season. Mm-hmm. And here Vanderbilt is making a run in the tournament and having a solid comp. It's not that they just made this run in the tournament. And there are so many games on their schedule that, yeah, they might be a loss. And I know people can say that, well, they didn't win, so it doesn't matter. But they were in the game for that Florida game a couple weeks ago. They should have beaten mm-hmm. Florida. They should have beaten Alabama the other day. They have been neck and neck with Kentucky when they played them in Memorial Coliseum. They were right there. It's not like they're getting blown out. Last night, I only got to watch the second half because I landed at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And the game is tipping off. I'm like trying to stream the game on my phone. We're trying to get our bags. I'm like, Dad, hurry up, get us to the hotel and then get to the restaurant. And then I'm sitting there, we're trying to catch up, but I'm staring at the screen and everybody's like, you're fine. It's Vanderbilt, yada, yada. Like,
I was telling you it was going to be fine. I thought Vanderbilt would have been tired. I mean, after those the third day of games consecutively.
I will say though, that first game against Georgia, they really were lucky that Georgia didn't come to play whatsoever, because they essentially were able to empty their bench.
Yeah, so they quit.
They were like, we're not having our coach next season. We're not making the tournament. We're pretty much done. You could tell they just did it. They frustrating season for them. But I mean,
yeah, they broke the huddle to PCB on three.
Exactly. But the nice thing for Vanderbilt was, okay, we're going to get a win, but Rodney Chapman only had to play a little bit. Him coming off an injury was crucial for the team, that he didn't have to play the entire 40 minutes to get a win to move on. Scottie Pippen Jr. only had to play like 20 minutes, which he's normally a full game guy all the time.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season, you needed Scottie Pippen to play every single minute of every game to win. You've significantly seen these other guys be able to keep up, and he's been able to spread a little bit of the cake. Everybody's been able to eat a little bit. And that, I think, leads to the success of this Vanderbilt team and Jerry Stackhouse with this program.
Yeah. And here's my thing too, is when you're judging, like, I hear a lot of talk like in Nashville media about people saying that Jerry Stackhouse, you know, can't coach. He was a big name and yada, yada, yada. Oh, well, Vanderbilt still hasn't made an NCAA tournament. Like, listen, this program was not even in the same stratosphere, in the same universe as an NCAA tournament 3 years ago when Stackhouse took this job. Vanderbilt is not known for their lucrative and endless supply of athletic resources, okay? Out of all the schools in the SEC, they're dead last in that category, have been notoriously dead last in that category. What Jerry Stackhouse has done has made them better every single year. He has made players better every single year without having to recruit five-star guys. Yes, Scottie Pippen Jr. is an all-SEC player, is one of the better players in the SEC, was a three-star recruit coming out of high school. He wasn't that heralded, and he's gotten better. What Jerry Stackhouse is great with is player development. Look at how Miles Studi got better as the year went on. He has become a lights-out shooter for this Vanderbilt team. Jordan Wright has gotten better as the season's gone along. A lot of these guys, like Quentin Melora Brown, had to be the only center for this team all year long, and you could easily tell how much better he got from the time the season started to when he had to play 30 minutes against Alabama and basically be all of your big man production, because Liam Robbins only gave you 10 minutes. And Liam Robbins for the entire year hadn't been able to stay healthy. He's only been able to play a handful of games, but you've only had one true center all year long. And a lot of these guys got better being in that position. And that's what Jerry Stackhouse is good with, player development. He did it in Toronto in their G League system by basically to helping develop Pascal Siakam into not just an all-star, but a key contributor to a championship team, turning Fred VanVleet into an undrafted player, into an NBA all-star and starter on an NBA championship team. He's done that with players. That's his track record. That's why you bring someone with that track record to Vanderbilt, because you're not expecting them to recruit everybody out of the gym. You're not expecting them to just get better athletes than everybody. What you get Jerry Stackhouse here to do is to work with what you have and make everybody better. And he's done that the last 3 years consistently. There's visible progress here. And for anyone who tries to diminish that, doesn't understand how hard it is to win at Vanderbilt. I mean, it took Rick Barnes 3 years to get winning at Tennessee. Those first 2 years that Rick Barnes had at Tennessee, where Kevin Punter is his best player, those were horrific teams, and they weren't even close to sniffing an NCAA tournament. Vanderbilt's going to be all right. And I think the win against Alabama was the biggest one in the Stackhouse era. And that's the one you can look at and say, hey, this program has made visible strides into being what they absolutely can be and reaching some potential.
Elijah, I completely agree. I mean, it's very easy for people to sit here and say, well, you know, they lost, yada, yada. Looking at the final Kentucky score, I think it ended up being, 7 points? They ended up losing by 7 points.
Or six, yeah. They ended up cutting it, keeping it within six. And Kentucky at no point really looked to be in control of the game.
No, not whatsoever. And I think, you know, a lot of the points you hit on, it's really easy for people to just think that Vanderbilt's irrelevant just because they have been irrelevant these last couple of years in the SEC, or it's really easy for people to say, even bringing in the fan base, nobody cares about how many times we heard, nobody cares about college basketball in Nashville. And, you know, I would keep an eye on this Vanderbilt team. I personally think from the first game we saw them play this season, I remember going and watching Loyola Chicago coming in and just, I mean, don't get me wrong, Loyola Chicago is a great program, you know, Final Four a couple of years ago, and have just been a very solid program moving forward. But I remember seeing them like, oh God, I don't know how this team's going to look this year. Really only seeing Scottie Pippen Jr. That's the only reason people are looking at this team is because Scottie Pippen Jr. But this year, it hasn't all had to be on his back. He's actually been able, they've been able to have a cohesive team and have other players step up, like you've mentioned. And, you know, I really think that this was a very successful season for this team. I think if you look at the first game to this last game they played yesterday, and hopefully they'll get into the NIT tournament, because I do think that they can make a run in the NIT.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
You know, they made it farther than Auburn. One more game than, well, okay, technically didn't make it farther in the sense of like moving through the bracket.
Round wise, yeah.
But hey, they won more games in the SEC tournament than Auburn did. Auburn was ranked number one in the country. And we are going to get to that game. But I mean, they played three games in 3 days. They won two of them.
Yeah. I mean, and gave Kentucky all it can handle. Kentucky's going to be a team that's a two seed. And if Kentucky wins the SEC tournament, I think they have a really good chance to be a one, especially considering Baylor got beat by Oklahoma in their first round game in the Big 12 tournament. I think that's a pretty significant loss for Baylor. And then when you consider that Baylor might be without one of their best players for the rest of the season too, in Kendall Brown, the committee is going to take that into consideration, as well as the resume they have at hand. And you can really see the winner of Tennessee, Kentucky, maybe, well, Tennessee, I don't know if Tennessee's in a one conversation yet, but they honestly should be if they win this conference tournament.
But also Vanderbilt went head to head with arguably Kentucky's, what, one of the best teams in the country right now.
Yeah.
And level they're playing at?
Yeah. And they're like, Kentucky's a top three team in college basketball to me. I mean, like when you watch this Kentucky team, the way they can score at all three levels, they have multiple ball handlers and distributors. The way this team attacks and the way this team can defend and rebound, no other team really in college basketball can do that, with the exception of like Gonzaga and Arizona. I think those three are in, with Baylor and Kansas on the outside of that. I mean, your best teams in college hoops right now. And the way they handled last night, wasn't like Kentucky dominated in every single fashion of the game. If you look at, you know, the three or the four factors of basketball that Dean Oliver says, you know, wins you basketball games: effective field goal shooting. There's maybe a 1% difference between the two teams when I did the math this morning. When you look at offensive rebound percentage, Vanderbilt grabbed 27% of their offensive, 27% of their misses. Kentucky grabbed 37%, which Kentucky on the season grabs 38%. So if you use that kind of context, it makes a little more, sense that it sounds better than saying just, oh yeah, Kentucky grabbed 10 offensive rebounds. It's a lot, but that's actually below their average. And if you look at like turnovers, I mean, Vanderbilt only turned it over 16% of their possessions. Kentucky turned it over on 17% of their possessions. They kept the turnover battle the same. And when you look at free throw rate, they got to the line. Vanderbilt got to the line 10 times. Kentucky got to the line, let's see, 13 times. So when you look at the things that really win you or lose you basketball games, Vanderbilt is right there. Was right there with Kentucky that entire game. That was a legitimate 6-point game. And so,
yes, it was a legitimate 6-point game. It's easy for people just to see the box score and not look at any of the stats or anything like that, and just look at the final score and say, oh yeah, you know, Kentucky probably handled them the whole game. Vanderbilt probably wasn't even in it. But no, they were
not at all.
1-2, back and forth the entire game. Like, and Kentucky ended up pulling away. I really do think that 8-0 run after the technical foul from Jerry Stackhouse, that was a turning point in the game, which really did hurt Vanderbilt. I get it. Mm-hmm. You're in a good moment. There's going to be fouls like that all over the place. I honestly, you know, I don't blame Jerry for that technical foul.
Yeah, I don't either. And that part of the game too, it does stink that that's what kind of separated things a little bit.
Yeah.
In the second half, then you have that the last minute of the first half where you're up one, and then you have two offensive rebounds given up, a putback, and then a bad pass on the inbounds pass, and one layup. And then instead of going into the half up one, you're going into the half down five. I think that definitely didn't do him any favors either. But here, before we go and take a break real quick, I do want to mention this team, this Vanderbilt team, got this close to beating Kentucky, and Scottie Pippen Jr., in terms of shooting the ball, did not play well. Scottie Pippen Jr. is 1-for-10 on 2-point field goals last night. 1-for-10. Kentucky game planned him out of the game in terms of, you're going to make all these other players that haven't beaten anybody all year long try to beat us. And Miles Studi, Jordan Wright, Rodney Chapman, just about did it too. I mean, they kept them in it the way they shot the 3-point ball, and that's how this team's identity is going to be moving forward. So that's one thing to keep a look or keep an eye on here in the upcoming seasons with Vanderbilt in terms of their team building. But you mentioned it earlier, Texas A&M, the SEC Cinderella, knocking off number one seed at Auburn and the SEC regular season champs. We'll react to that. We'll discuss what kind of chance they have against Arkansas and what kind of chance they have to actually win this SEC tournament and squeak their way into the NCAAs. We'll get into that and more on the other side as you're listening to Courtside with Kamla Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's Courtside with Kamla Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking SEC tournament. Michelle actually is live from the SEC tournament. She will be covering the games today for the station. And the biggest story so far in the SEC tournament, not just Oscar Tshiebwe grabbing 5 offensive rebounds and leading Kentucky to a win against Vanderbilt, not just Tennessee basically taking a surge from Mississippi State and pulling away late with 2 excellent guard play from Zakai Ziegler and Kennedy Chandler, but it is number one seeded Auburn falling to Texas A&M, and not just falling to Texas A&M, getting absolutely hammered by Texas A&M in that first half. Auburn made a game of it late, but it was not enough. Not enough Wendell Green heat check 3-pointers enough to be able to get them by Texas A&M. And now as we're looking at semifinal Saturday, it's Tennessee, Kentucky, like we expected, and Arkansas and Texas A&M. Michelle, what are your initial takes from that Texas A&M and Auburn upset yesterday, and what does this mean for Texas A&M moving forward?
First off, incredible game by Texas A&M. I walked into the Nashville airport yesterday around like in the afternoon, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, like Auburn will probably advance. Like, it's Texas A&M. They just almost lost to Florida in an incredible game in overtime.
Maybe the game of the tournament so far. Yeah,
exactly. That looked like it was going to go into another overtime. But I just remember thinking in my head, oh, Auburn's got it, whatever. And then I got one of those ESPN updates on my phone that was like, Texas A&M could upset Auburn halftime score. And what, Auburn had 23 points at the half?
Oh, they had 23 points at the half and were shooting 16% from the field in the half. Auburn couldn't buy a basket in that first half because Texas A&M was absolutely smothering them defensively.
So I remember looking, not thinking and not registering the score and how much basketball has been played, because I didn't watch the first half because I was traveling. And then I remember looking and being like, Auburn has 23 points in that half?
Mm-hmm.
What? And here's a team that could either shoot the lights out or have 23 points in
the half. Yeah. Go 2-for-17 from 2-point range in one half.
And have, well, okay, first takeaway from the game, I think the guards hurt Jabari Smith.
Yes.
I think when they're at the end of the game, just throwing up kind of wild shots and just trying too hard to make an incredible moment, if that makes sense. Trying too hard to make this incredible shot rather than playing smart basketball and setting up a play and taking time rather than, oh, we're ahead in transition, so I'm going to shoot from the logo. Like, let's slow it down. Let's set up a play.
Even that shot was the most, oh, no. Yes, but no kind of shot on the planet.
Exactly. And I think Auburn got ahead of themselves. I think Texas A&M having to play a couple games already in that arena, already being a little bit loose, Auburn came out flat, especially in the first half. I mean, they were able to cut it close in the second half. They were able to run some plays, you know, get some offensive production. But yes, Texas A&M played tremendous defense. They were able to, you know, shut down Auburn. I think Auburn really got ahead of themselves, came out flat, and they just choked under pressure, to be completely honest.
It's not like, I don't think Texas A&M is this team, right? Like, I beating Florida in overtime on a miraculous fall away three from straightaway, that's Texas A&M. Living on the edge, like, that's Texas A&M. Like, I mean, the whole season, they've never really impressed me. Defensively, they're good. Almost all Buzz Williams coach teams are good defensively, but none of them are supposed to beat the number one team in the conference. I just have been so underwhelmed with Texas A&M all year. I've never even really had them on my radar in terms of the bubble. Now you kind of have to. But the biggest part, like with Auburn for me, is I look at this game and it's, okay, what'd you get from Walker Kessler? Oh, I mean, you got 16 points. He blocked four shots. He grabbed 9 rebounds. You got what you wanted out of him. What'd Jabari Smith do? He was your leading scorer. He scored 17. He even dropped 4 dimes in the game. He blocked 2 shots and had 2 steals. But the guard play, like, I love how you mentioned the guard play, because that was what got Auburn beat. And it's what's going to get them beat in the NCAA tournament, because they don't have consistent play from their guards. You can't have 0 for 14 games from Katie Johnson. Katie Johnson shot 14 shots yesterday and missed all 14 shots.
And he got heat on social media for that.
As he should.
So many memes because, well, I have obviously a lot of Kentucky people I follow. Surprise, surprise, right?
Stunned. Yeah, shocker.
And so many memes because he posted a photo on Instagram and you can see Sevier Wheeler in the background, like, oh, we're babysitting tonight, or I don't know when it was. And everybody went and found that photo and was like, you can't say this and then go over 14 in the SEC tournament.
Over.
But I think, Elijah, what you just hit on there, you know, about Texas A&M, okay, now we got to look out for them in the bubble just because they beat Auburn. But I pose you this question. Are we looking at them for the bubble, not because of their resume, but because they beat Auburn, the at one point number one team in the country?
Mm-hmm.
Or does this say more about Auburn having a bad day, having awful guard play, which killed them? They choked under the pressure, because we know this is not that Auburn team. We have seen them all season be very, very consistent. And then, you know, when the bright lights shine on them and it's their first day in the tournament, shoot 23 points in the first half.
I think it's more of an Auburn thing than it is a Texas A&M thing, because Auburn started to show these warts towards the end of the season too.
Yes.
Like, I think they're a team that kind of peaked early. And if you look at this, these teams played on February 12th. So, I mean, it was a month ago, and Auburn absolutely handled them. That was also when Auburn was playing their best basketball of the year. Auburn got off to that massive win streak. And I think their record at one point, I mean, it was like 21-1 or something like that. Like, they had the best record in college basketball. They got that first loss to Arkansas. And since then, they lost about 3 games in the span of less than a month. So that's something they hadn't done all year long. They started playing tougher competition because they didn't really face a murderer's row in the non-conference. They beat Murray State, which now looks like a really good win because Murray State's the number 19 team in the country. But their schedule consisted of playing teams like Nebraska, who's 10-22, Yale, solid team, but an Ivy League team, yeah. UCF, Syracuse, who's really bad, and they beat Loyola Chicago, who is a really good team, and then took Connecticut, a really good team, double overtime in that tournament over in the battle for Atlantis. But I think what happened with Auburn is they've just fallen back to earth. Like, they are a team that is limited because of the guard play. I think Katie Johnson shooting 0 for 14 in the game is a big red flag. I think Alan Flanagan not being able to get quality shots or create shots is a big red flag. Zepp Jasper shooting 2 for 8 from the field is a big red flag, because not only can these guys, if they're not shooting, helping you, they're not shot creators. Like, Katie Johnson's not a great shot creator. Not a lot of these guys are shot creators. The offense flows through their forwards. But in the NCAA tournament, you have to have that variance of scoring. You got to be able to lean on guards late in the game, because teams like Texas A&M are going to do exactly this. They're going to make Jabari Smith hit tough shots. It wasn't like Jabari Smith was incredibly efficient. He was 5 of 16 from the field yesterday. They're going to make him shoot tough shots. They're going to make everybody else beat him. Got to do what Kentucky did to Vanderbilt. But where Vanderbilt stepped up and had other players knock down shots or create shots for others when needed, Auburn couldn't do that. And that, to me, is very concerning for Auburn moving forward. I don't want to trash Texas A&M, because, like, this is a really cool run, really cool story, really cool run. But this isn't a team that's impressed me all year long. They're playing their best at the right time. But I think it is definitely a little more of Auburn kind of declining a little bit as well. We'll get into that on the other side. We'll talk about how Texas A&M and Arkansas match up. These are two teams that play each other very, very well in the regular season. We'll also get into Tennessee, Kentucky. We'll also get into the 3 overtime thriller that the local Middle Tennessee State Blue Raiders, my beloved alma mater, were in yesterday against UAB. And is UAB a Cinderella? We still got Cinderella talk, because the tournament bracket is unveiled tomorrow. Which teams should you look for to do the bracket busting? We'll get into that and more on the other side as you're listening to Courtside with Camel Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's SEC semifinal Saturday here in March, March 12th, one day away until the brackets are unveiled. It's Selection Sunday Eve. This is better than Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, all combined. This is the day. This is it. Brackets are unveiled tomorrow. Tennessee and Kentucky playing for higher seeds. Tennessee can get as high as a 2 seed. I think they're 2 seed already. Kentucky can get a 1. But before they do that and win the SEC, they have to play each other, Michelle. As desperate as we have it.
Round 3, baby. Oh, I am Elijah. Listen.
Yes.
I had people tweeting at me during this Kentucky-Vanderbilt game last night. I had to put my phone away. Because
I'm glad you did, for your health. I'm glad you did.
I knew if I got all the way to Tampa. Listen, I had Robbie and Joe on Friday. Oh, Michelle, Kentucky gets upset, all this stuff. I was like, you know what, guys? I genuinely was like, okay, block it out. Block out the haters. Like, let me just – I gotta zone in. Let me just get mentally prepared. Show ends. I'm like, okay, focus on getting to Tampa. Then see the second half of that Vanderbilt game. Was shaking in my boots a little bit, Elijah. Definitely was very nervous. But, ooh, a big sigh of relief. And right before my dinner came, had a nice dinner with my family. Today, we're going to go hang out with one of my dad's best friends. And his wife is a UK alum. Lots of Kentucky fans there. Oh, it is going to be an unreal environment. I've seen some pictures of Tampa. The amount, we were just talking about this in the break, the amount of Kentucky and Tennessee fans here in Tampa is absolutely amazing. I love Joe Rexroad has been covering the whole tournament. We're on the morning show and he has been tweeting pictures of just the arena and just saying how, like, wow, these crowds are amazing. And sometimes it's hit or miss for conference tournaments. You just don't know. I mean, this was the first year it was in Tampa. It's usually in Nashville, which is a central location. Obviously we're a little bitter about, I mean, I'm here, I'm so I'm really happy
about it.
But I mean,
I'm a little bitter.
I love having it in Nashville. I've gone to not COVID year, but the year before that and stuff. It's always great because you see a lot of teams come down. Nashville's a fun spot to visit, but listen, the SEC fans showed out in
Tampa. Which impresses me. Like, you know, Kentucky fans always do it. Like, they don't call it Little Blue Nation. They call it Big Blue Nation. Like, they travel and they earn that reputation because everywhere the SEC tournament is, they go. Don't matter if it's in Nashville like it usually is or if it's in St. Louis like it's been once, which I thought was the most preposterous thing on the planet, or if it's in Tampa, which really isn't a centralized location for the SEC at all, they always show up. But what kind of surprises me from what you told me and what I've seen from Joe's reporting too is the amount of Tennessee fans. Like, Tennessee fans are really supportive and they have a reputation for being really supportive, especially in football and women's basketball. But for men's basketball too, like, the fact that they're swarming Tampa the way they are too is a little surprising to me. But it's good. That's going to make for an incredible environment. And you're going to be in for a treat because I think that's when it can be the closest thing to what we got in the semifinals a couple of years ago when it was in Nashville. Tennessee and Kentucky played on semifinal Saturday, game that went to overtime, the Lamonte Bearden game, not Bearden, Turner game, where he hit that shot, you know, late in the game to beat Kentucky. I think that one go to overtime. I can't remember if that was in regulation or overtime. I think it was an OT.
That
was a thriller.
Of that,
you mentally erased that one from the bank.
I don't think it went into overtime. I think it was a win in regulation. Yeah. I could be wrong about that because, I mean, as you can imagine, I choose to block those.
You just gotta try to get those out of the memory there.
I just remember walking up and down Broadway, just like
slump.
In my Kentucky gear, like, and having Tennessee fans run up to me like, "Go Vols!" I was like, Yeah.
You're like, I hate my life right now. But I mean,
in terms of, so awesome.
It does. And that atmosphere was fantastic. And that's what you're going to get in Tampa today between these two teams, because there's a lot on the line. Kentucky can get a 1 seed if they win the SEC tournament. Tennessee is going to flirt with a 1 seed. I don't think they'll actually get it because I think I have them as a mid-2 right now because they actually have a fantastic resume when you look at the things that the tournament committee actually value. But most importantly, an SEC title potentially on the line, and bragging rights. These two teams split. Kentucky beat the brakes out of Tennessee at Rupp Arena. And Tennessee's been a completely different team ever since, including a win at Thompson Bowling Arena against the same Kentucky team, in which they looked pretty dominant for most of the game. Neither of these teams have lost at home, and that's where they both played. Now we're getting them on a neutral floor away from both states. It's not as neutral if it's in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena. We're getting a neutral game in Tampa Bay, Florida. This is as neutral as it can get for both of these teams. When we look at this on paper, Michelle, it's going to be closer than both of those games were earlier in the season. But what are some of the matchup things that you're looking for that is going to be key for both of these teams to end up winning this game?
So at first glance, I think of, okay, guard play, I think it's going to be, obviously, that's going to be very, very big for both teams, right? They've got two tremendous backcourts. You've got Kennedy Chandler, Zakai Ziegler for Tennessee, then you for Kentucky, you've got Ty Washington and Sevier Wheeler. Who those four? So now that Ty Washington and Sevier Wheeler are healthy, up against Kennedy Chandler and Zakai Ziegler, you don't want to mess with those four. That is going to be, first off, an insane matchup. Zakai Ziegler and Sevier Wheeler are arguably the fastest, shortest, but doesn't matter. They don't let their height affect the way they play college basketball. Those two matchups, I think creating turnovers are going to be huge. You know, I think the pace, right? Sometimes I was talking about this with a friend, sometimes Sevier Wheeler, you can tell he can see, his court vision is so great. You can see in his head, he can see the game go faster than it is. Sometimes he gets ahead of himself and will go fast. So I think if he does that, if he gets in his own head, that's not going to be good for Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So guard those four. And then I think also, you know, obviously Oscar Tshiebwe, he's won a couple national players of the year. He's been one of the highlights of this Kentucky team. But the last time they played Tennessee, Fulkerson was able to get by him. He was able to figure him out. We talked about how Oscar is very top heavy and moving left and right. He's just not as fast as when he's, you know, blocking shots or getting rebounds in the vertical jump and being able to be aggressive on that front. But Fulkerson was figuring out where he kind of pump fake one way, go around him and get an easy layup. And that happened a couple times in Thompson Bowling Arena. You talk about, again, how these teams split, right? They also both went undefeated at home. Incredible home arenas. And Joe Rex, I hope you're listening now, because Rupp Arena, I will stand by my stance that it is still the best in the SEC.
It is a jewel. It is a jewel.
And I think today it's going to be really interesting. I'm definitely going to be texting and tweeting during the game just to see if I can gauge the percentage of fans on each end. Like, is it going to be 50-50? Is it going to be, I mean, I've seen a lot of each. I'm really excited to see when the stands are actually full, to see what it looks like. So that's going to play a factor too. Mm-hmm. And then I think, like you said, I think this is going to be a lot closer, right? When they played in Rupp, Kentucky beat them by a solid 28 or something like that. And then
30? I think it actually ended up being 30. I think it was 107-77, but it was in that ballpark of being pretty darn ugly.
And then when they played in Knoxville, Tennessee beat them by like a solid 15. So it's not like we've seen really a close game from them. Mm-hmm. But from what we've seen from each team throughout the season, the consistency, being undefeated at home, I really do think today is going to go down to wire, a potentially overtime game. At least I hope, because this teams is going to mean a lot. It's going to hold a lot of weight. It helped Tennessee get to a 2 seed for Selection Sunday, get them to the finals tomorrow and win an SEC championship, which they haven't done in a very, I think it's like since the 80s or something.
70s. Like, we're talking, I think it's 1976. Okay. Like, I mean, it's a long time. I've almost heard different years for this, but it is a long, long time since Tennessee's won an SEC tournament.
I mean, that would be huge for their program.
Massive.
I have never seen it done.
Jared has never seen it done in his lifetime.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jared, our producer, our big Vols fan. I mean, I'm happy to wait in on it, right? So, Jared, you're in your 30s, right?
Yep, 33.
33. Okay, you've never seen one. You're a huge fan. You guys have had so many incredible teams these last couple of years. I think of the Admiral Schofield year. What about last year, right?
Yeah, and you want to go way back, like Wayne Chisholm, like all of these guys.
The Bruce Pearl years. Yeah, those Bruce Pearl teams. Years.
Those were some stud teams, and they just could never get going at the end. And you can only play.
I feel like you guys need it to get the monkey off your back and have fans stop telling, like, stop saying, oh, Rick Barnes, like, get him out of there. Can't perform in March. Can't perform in postseason. Blah, blah, blah. We don't care if they're successful in the regular season. Yada, yada, yada. Because you have people out there who are saying that about Rick Barnes. I don't think there he's going some, anywhere. No. I think he's been very successful at Tennessee. But yeah, unfortunately, postseason, winning an SEC championship and March, it's what people remember.
Yeah, and like this, it's funny because Tennessee's had some painful losses in SEC championship games or tournament games. Like I think the Mississippi State one back in like 2011, where they were so much better than that team. That was the Tennessee team that went to the Elite Eight. Yeah. Ironically enough, that one was played in Tampa. The last time it was played in Tampa. And Mississippi State had like a 10-block game from Jarvis Fernardo, and like there was a lot of voodoo that happened to keep them from winning that game. Or the first Bruce Pearl year where Rinaldo Blackman played out of his mind. For South Carolina, and I probably botched that guy's name, but or Balkman, okay. Not Blackman, Balkman, or Blackman was an NBA player. And South Carolina pulled off that upset, and Tennessee's had like they've had some demons in the SEC tournament, and that's one thing that you got to keep in mind too. Kentucky has won a lot of these, and Tennessee not like obviously has had some bad history there. But one thing I'm looking at too, and I like you mentioned the guard play because that's going to be the most significant thing. Is Tennessee relies heavily on assisting their baskets. The offense was clicking yesterday when Kennedy Chandler and Zakai Ziegler were finding players around the rim. They're able to conduct the offense. I think between the two of them, they had about 11 assists maybe. They were instrumental in getting the offense going against Mississippi State. They've been instrumental in getting that offense going all year long. And for Kentucky too, they don't rely on assists as much, but they rely on shooting, I guess, just as much as Tennessee does. And Sevier Wheeler is a one-man assist machine in terms of ball distribution. And if Tennessee can help eliminate passing lanes and create turnovers, that's like the biggest matchup to me is Kentucky in SEC play, number one in avoiding turnovers on offense. Tennessee was number three in the conference in terms of forcing turnovers. Tennessee's number 13 in the entire country in forcing turnovers. That's what Tennessee's defense does really well. And when Tennessee's not shooting the ball, they rely on getting those turnovers to create easy baskets. So if Kentucky takes care of the ball and they play this on a pure possession by possession basis, that's where the rebounding edge is really going to come into play. And Tennessee's going to win that regardless. And we'll go ahead and we'll talk about that on the other side too, because then I want to get to the other point as well about the forwards, the Oscar Tshiebwe versus the three or four forwards that Tennessee is going to throw at him, because it's going to be a by committee thing for Tennessee, because Tshiebwe is going to get a lot of those forward minutes, and Tennessee is going to have some depth on the forwards to be able to compete with them.
Really quick. Also too, we're going to talk about forwards heading into the next segment, but last time Tennessee, one of the best defenses in the country, shut down Kellen Grady, wasn't able to shoot anything. It's a very instrumental part of this Kentucky offense. And heading into the postseason, they're going to need him to be hitting threes if they want to get a win and if they want to win this SEC tournament.
Mm-hmm. one of the biggest reasons why that offense can score at all three levels is Kellen Grady's ability to move without the ball and get easy 3-point shots. Tennessee's really good at not allowing teams to do that. So we'll break down whether or not we think that's going to happen on the other side as you're listening to an SEC semifinal Saturday edition of Courtside with Camlin Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. SEC semifinal Saturday rolls along here on Courtside with Camlin Knezovic, and we're breaking down the big rubber match between Tennessee and Kentucky. Kentucky clubbed Tennessee at Rupp Arena. Tennessee smacked Kentucky at Thompson Bowling Arena. And now at Amalie Arena in Tampa, they're going to have the rematch for the rights to play the winner of Arkansas and Texas A&M in the SEC championship game. Michelle, we talked about the guard play for Kentucky in terms of Sevier Wheeler and Ty Washington being able to create space and be able to avoid turnovers. And we talked about Tennessee maybe having a little bit of an advantage on the forwards in terms of Oscar Tshiebwe getting scored on by Fulkerson the last time they played. And Brandon Huntley Hatfield, there might be some isolation basketball going on there, Tennessee, and for Tennessee, if you look at that matchup. But One thing you mentioned too before the break that we definitely need to hit on too is another X factor of Kellen Grady, a guy who is a lights out 3-point shooter, one of the better 3-point shooters in the country. Not many teams get the blessing of a 2,000-point scorer from another school to come in and play for you for a year. But
why don't we just bring you over to Kentucky.
Yeah.
Season. This is the roster we got. Why don't you come from Davidson? Come on.
Take your 2,000 points with you. Your 44% 3-point shooting and your ability to just get open whenever you bleep and want on a basketball floor. And yeah, we'll add you to this offense.
Ellen's like, sign me up.
It is incredible what that guy can do off the ball. And that's one of the things that makes Kentucky dangerous, right? Like, he moves so well off the ball. Kentucky's such a good screening team that he gets himself open, and you don't have to make like these miracle passes. You don't have to have like Chris Paul as your point guard to create these shots, because Grady can get himself open. The last time they played, he only got 6 3-pointers off, only made 2 against Tennessee. And he's typically shooting like what, 8 to 10 a game. And none of those 6 were clean looks. They were all tough threes. Michelle, when we look at the matchup and we look at how Tennessee pushes, you know, guys like Kellen Grady off the line, and the way Kentucky has been really good at adjusting this year too. I mean, the first time they played, for reference, he shot 7, but made 4 threes against Tennessee. What kind of role is Kellen Grady going to play today? And do you think Tennessee will be as successful at keeping him off the 3-point line and making him shoot really tough shots?
I mean, I think Tennessee's going to try, because if they're not, then that would just be not smart game planning on their end. I think definitely they're going to try to limit the amount of shots Kellen Grady gets up, because if it's late in a game, you don't want him shooting a 3-pointer, because the odds it's going in are pretty high, at least higher than most of everybody else on the team. Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be one of the keys for Tennessee, is eliminating the amount of times Kellen Grady can shoot. I think then on the flip side for Kentucky, it's getting ahead in transition and having Kellen beat them back to try to get a couple threes in transition, so Tennessee doesn't have enough time to get back. And I think, you know, it's their strengths on both ends, right? We've talked about Tennessee's defense all year. One of the top defenses in the country, I would say arguably top 3 defense in the country.
Oh, for sure. Without a doubt.
And Kellen Grady on the flip side, one of the best 3-point shooters in the country, right? He's wide open. Yeah. If he gets ahead of you on transition, which is one of Kentucky's strengths, is getting ahead on in transition, right? You've got Sahvir Wheeler, you've got Ty Washington getting a turnover, getting ahead on transition, having Kellen Grady hit a 3. And if he gets a couple of those early, or 1 or 2 early, okay, now he's feeling comfortable. Now he feels more comfortable. Hey, I got a couple of those in transition. Now, even if Tennessee's guarding him, he's going to feel more comfortable to shoot it. Whereas in that second Tennessee game, they were on him the whole game. He didn't even have a chance to get hot, to feel comfortable. And this is only the second time they're playing in this arena, both teams, right? They haven't had a couple games to play in, but a sense of comfortability.
Yeah.
Words are hard this morning. Then he's going to feel more comfortable to shoot those tougher shots later in the game when they are all over him. I mean, it's March. You could see him. We've seen teams hit. Who just shot a shot the other day? And there was 2 guys guarding him. Oh, Tulsa. Oh, Tulsa? Or,
UT Chattanooga.
Oh, UT Chattanooga. Shout out.
Gene Baptiste. Yeah. He's been there for like 6 years. Yeah. Incredible shot. Like, double teamed. And like, you have 4 seconds to shoot the ball. And like, those kind of shots happen in March too.
They definitely happen in March. So, but if Kellen has a game where he's, you know, getting shut down the entire game, he's not confident. And if you're only shooting 7 shots, that is the opposite of what Cal wants. He wants his shooters to be shooting. I remember when Tyler Hero was on the team a couple of years ago, he's like, shoot the ball, keep shooting it.
Yep.
Create opportunities for yourself. Keep moving. Be good on offense when the ball is not in your hand.
Right. Exactly. And that's what Kellen Grady does best. I think it's the best Kentucky player in terms of moving without the ball since Tyler Hero. And that's what made Tyler Hero a high draft pick, was because
look at him now in Miami, not doing too bad.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very valuable skill. And I think Tennessee is going to try their best to negate that. I think you can only do it so much. You have to be able to at least limit the looks in transition. And that's, I'm glad you made that point too, because that's where Kentucky killed Tennessee in the first game. And then Tennessee was able to control their effort in terms of getting back on defense or maybe not allowing these long outlet passes. That's something I think that is more manageable. But to me, coming down to it, we've broken down a lot of these matchups. I think Sheboy's going to be a little better on the defensive end. I think they're probably going to start double teaming to help him out, or at least showing help whenever the ball gets down there. Fulkerson's one-on-one with Sheboy. I think you're going to see a lot of that. Tennessee's going to try to go back to that well a lot to be able to get a lot of points. But at the end of the day, I think Kentucky does have the big matchup advantage where they do rebound really well. They're going to maximize a lot of possessions, and they don't turn the ball over as much. I think if Kentucky can really manage those turnovers, which hasn't been a problem for them all year, Tennessee just makes it a problem for other teams. But I think if Kentucky just keeps that number really low, I can see them playing for the title on Sunday. So that's going to be
playing for the title. And I mean, well, Tennessee and Kentucky are playing today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. I heard you wrong. I was
For a chance to play for the title tomorrow. Yeah. Against the winner of Texas A&M and Arkansas.
Exactly. And I also could see these teams making a deep run in the tournament. Let's not forget that, yes, this is the SEC tournament, but both of these teams will, I mean, hopefully make big splashes in the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just hope they're not on the same side, because I really don't want to see them play again.
For a fourth time. Right? Yeah.
And I also just don't think it would be fair. I think Cal had a press conference a couple weeks ago, and it's like, spread these SEC teams out. They have been playing each other all year in conference play, and they're great teams, but let's spread them out. Let's make it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be an unreal. Like, if they were on different sides of the bracket and you were able to see some of these meet up in the Final Four, but let's not meet up on the same side of the bracket, because they're top teams in the country. And you want those teams to meet each other at a championship game. You don't want to see them playing in a Sweet 16, because they're both Final Four caliber teams. Mm-hmm. And also, I do want to say, if you are listening to our show, we have good news, because we are not about to end the show right now. We are going 30 more minutes today.
We have two more segments. They're going a little longer today. Two more segments. We're going to lead you right up to Preds pregame against the Blues. Nice matinee matchup between two really good hockey teams. But before then, we have two more segments to go. Michelle mentioned making runs in the tournament, and what's more fun than the little guys making the runs? We've got some Cinderellas we have to keep our eye on going into the NCAA tournament next week. We'll tell you who to look for and who to watch whenever you're filling out your brackets on Sunday and Monday here on Courtside of the Camel Knezovic, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's right. We are only 24 hours or so away from the NCAA tournament bracket being unveiled on Selection Sunday. So much hype to go around. And here's the thing. The most fun part about this whole process, Michelle, is you're listening to Courtside of the Camel Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The most important most fun part of this whole process is trying to pick upsets. It happens every year. Last year, Oral Roberts, a 15 seed, beat Ohio State, beat Florida in the second round, and got to the Sweet 16 as a 15 for only the second time in NCAA tournament history. Picking these are hard, but that's also the fun part about this, because you know what happens every year. You just don't know which ones are going to happen. Michelle, who busted your bracket last year, and why is it Oral Roberts? Or was it Oral Roberts?
Well, of course it was. I mean, if Oral Roberts didn't bust your bracket, let me know who you're picking this year, because I'm obviously following your train.
And you're buying my lottery tickets from there on out.
Yes. And you're buying my lottery tickets, and you're placing all my bets. I like your luck. How about just Kentucky not even making the tournament? You know, that busted my bracket.
That alone, yeah.
Definitely Oral Roberts. Honestly, I didn't think Baylor was going to go that far.
Yeah, win the whole thing? Yeah.
They didn't bust my bracket, but like, it was, oh, you're going to go win this thing?
You're actually going to do it this year. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, now I'm trying to think. Trying to think back really quick. Definitely Oral Roberts did.
That was the big one. That ruined everything. I had Ohio State in the Final Four, and then half, like a fourth of my bracket is shattered already after the third game of the tournament. That was one of the first like slate of games. That's the beauty of it, though. I mean, this is the most unpredictable sporting event, most unpredictable playoff event on the planet, and we're going to help you find the teams that are going to do it this year. We've already scoped out some teams. We've looked at a few. We found some reasons why we like them, Michelle, and I'll go ahead and let you lead off. If you're looking at this field right now, because there's been a lot of auto bids given out already, which team interests you in terms of you see this team, you're like, yeah, they're going to beat someone they're not supposed to beat?
So we were just talking about this in San Diego. Shout out the Aggies. They're heading to the game today.
San Diego State, Mountain West.
They can get an auto bid. Mm-hmm. I know you love your Mountain West. I got to give my friend Lucas a shout out. He does PR for the Titans, and he's been telling me all year. He's at the tournament right now, and I've been following his posts on social media. I'm like,
jealous.
Oh my God, they're going to make a run. And you said it, they upset Colorado State Line. Mm-hmm. They won 63-58. I think that's definitely a team, especially if they win today, they get an auto bid.
Yep.
I think they take a little bit of a run in the tournament. They have a sick defense. And hey, if they can shut some teams down offensively, some teams that's how they win. You know, they aren't too good on defense, but they just shoot the lights out. They can shut it seems down like that. I think you can see them make a little bit of a run in the tournament.
See, I love Sam. I'm so glad you picked a Mountain West team for your Cinderella
watch. Oh, I know
watch.
You are. Love it.
I feel like my propaganda that I've been pumping on this show all year long has finally reached some people. I mean, this is a conference. It's a mid-major conference, right? They're going to get four teams in. And San Diego State might win that auto bid. But here's the thing with San Diego State, and this is what makes them so dangerous. And you mentioned the defense. They smother teams. I mean, absolutely smother teams. Like I talk about Arkansas being a smotherer, Texas A&M being a smotherer. This team will take all the oxygen out of your offense, and they do it without having to switch screens. Like, that's the crazy thing, too. You watch them. They don't switch a ton of screens. They're all great physical, all on-ball defenders. Number two defensively in the entire country, not just the Mountain West, not just amongst mid-majors. They are number two in all of college basketball in adjusted defensive rating. And here's my favorite stat of theirs. Like, they do a lot of really cool things. Like, they're 30th in the country in forcing turnovers, 5th in the country in making you shoot a low percentage from 2 and 3, 7th in two-point defense. But my favorite thing they do is you cannot speed them up defensively. They are dead last in the NCAA in terms of pace on defense. Their average possession on defense is about 19 seconds. The NCAA average is about 17 and a half. But they rank last. You cannot speed them up. They find ways to stay in front of you and make you use almost the entire shot clock to try to get your shot. They're really good at making you milk time to where the only shot you can take is the only one available with 3 or 4 seconds left on the shot clock. Those are my favorite kind of defenses. I'm with you there. I really like San Diego State. And hey, I mean, they're battle tested. Here's the thing with a lot of these smaller schools too, the knock on them is like they're not battle tested. They play in bad conferences. Well, San Diego State's played a murderer's row because Wyoming's a really good team with a really good guard who's going to get them into the NCAA tournament. Colorado State has a Wooden Award watch finalist in David Roddy on the team. They're a ranked team, and they have beaten them for the second time this year to get to the conference championship game. And then today they're going to play Boise State, the regular season champ of this conference, who also has an elite defense. Like, they play elite defenses. They are an elite defense. They can shut down anybody. And if Michelle, as you know, that if you can get to the last 5 minutes of a game and you're in it, anything can happen. And San Diego State's a team that can certainly get to you to that point. But I think the one I'm looking at and have been looking at for like a month now.
You've been talking about them for a while.
I am obsessed with this team. And they are the opposite of San Diego State in terms of style. That's South Dakota State, a different SDSU. These are the Jackrabbits, man. And this team is an offensive juggernaut. 11th in the country in offensive rating. They have an adjusted tempo. They play almost 70 possessions a game, which is in the top 60 in the country. They love to play fast on offense. Where San Diego State likes to smother you on defense and play slow and make you use the clock, their average offensive possession length is 15.6 seconds, which is 15th in the entire country. They're the best shooting team in the country. Almost shooting 60% and effective field goal shooting for the entire year. To give you an idea of how good that is, it's the best in the country, but the average for D1 teams is right at 50, and they're almost 10 percentage points higher. Also, this is the best three-point shooting team in college basketball, too. They shoot 44% from three on the entire season. And the best part, they don't rely on three-pointers to actually get them buckets. They ranked 257th out of 357 teams in college basketball in terms of three-point rate. Like, only 34% of their shots are threes, and three-pointers make up only 31% of the buckets they usually get on a daily on a game-by-game basis. So what that tells me is this team gets the shots they want when they want, which is usually really fast. They create a ton of possessions, so their margin for error is so much greater than a lot of other teams that you're going to find in this tournament. Like, the reason Virginia gets upset in the NCAA tournament when they would is because they play slow possessions. So if they reach a bad shooting night, they're going to have to bump that possession number from like 50 to 65 to make up for all that error. Well, South Dakota State, my SDSU, plays at like 70 possessions a game, and they make a lot of shots. They love playing games in the 80s and 90s. And if they have to settle for threes late in the shot clock, they can hit them because they're the best three-point shooting team in college basketball.
Well, and the best thing about this is once you're locked in, once you've secured your ticket, you've punched your ticket to go dancing, it does not matter what conference you're in. It does not matter what your regular season record was. It doesn't matter if you just barely slid in. All that matters is how you're playing right now. It doesn't matter if you're Memphis and you could be making it into the tournament and you had the weirdest season ever. And we said, could they be the biggest disappointment? And then they shoot the lights out against Houston the other day. Could they
completely make you forget about a catastrophic December? They had a catastrophic December and now they're a no brainer to be in the NCAA tournament.
100%. And could make a good run. We've talked about the team all year. We're like, okay, are they the biggest upset because they have such an incredible roster of so many talented players and they're in the American Conference? They should sweep it. And then on the flip side, what the heck are you doing? You just lost to Georgia. You just had another loss.
Bad Georgia team.
And now you are playing against Houston, one of the best teams in the country, made a big run last year in the tournament, and you beat the brakes off them.
You're playing your best right now. So those losses against, you know, Murray State, Ole Miss, Georgia don't matter anymore. The two losses, SMU, don't really matter anymore because they're playing their best right now. And before we get to the break too, I'll go ahead. So you have San Diego State. I had them in my latest bracket that I've created. I have them as an 8 seed playing against North Carolina as a 9. I would like San Diego State in that matchup against North Carolina. Honestly,
I think I would too. At least to cover. And I think it's a good game. Also, I do have to say really quick, you need to tell everybody when you do your bubble watch on Darren, Donick, and Chase, because you do, you guys update your brackets. And really quick, we need to highlight a school in Louisville, Kentucky, Bellarmine. They won their conference championship, but because they have only been a Division I school for two years.
I think you have to be in there for four.
You have to be in there for four. So they punched their ticket for the NCAA tournament, but because they haven't been a D1 school for a certain amount of years, the NCAA is not letting them play in the tournament. They also posted a video on Twitter of a press conference saying that they would be allowed to play in the NIT, and now they're not being allowed to play in the NIT. So that is very, very frustrating. Here is a mid-major team that punched their ticket in such a short time of being a Division I school, and the rug is swept from underneath them, and they won't be able to make any sort of run. And for schools like that, you just never know. It's so rare to get into the tournament.
You never know where you're going back.
You have to win your conference to at least secure that. And here's a team that did it, and now you don't know when you'll get back there. So just really frustrating. That was my little mini rant. When we talked about Cinderella stories, we talked about that team and how frustrating it is for them. And I think it's BS. I think that
it's total BS.
Are you kidding? What is the NCAA doing? Like, people love these mid-major teams making runs in the tournament. That is what makes the tournament. And it's a stupid rule. Like,
it robs a team of that opportunity. Like, Bellarmine had a very special year. This is a really good team, a team that has been knocking on the doorstep of a regular season A-Sun title and completely taking away the chance for a stupid rule. Why do you need 4 years to be allowed to play in a postseason event?
What's the difference between now and in 2 years? Oh, them maybe not making the tournament and not having this team.
And it's like, it's not even a transition period anymore. They've been D1 for 2 years now. What's the transition? Like, that's one thing I've always wanted to explain to me. It's not only is it a stupid rule because it robs a team of that opportunity to play for an NCAA tournament, but like, there's nothing explained as to why. It really is a stupid, unexplained rule that a team needs 4 years to be able to transition from D2 to D1. Like, I think Bellarmine winning national championships at the D2 level should have been their transition period. When they've been winning titles at the D2 level, that should have been the, okay, yeah, I'd say you're a D1 team. You can compete.
I don't even get it, too. Even if it was their first year as Division I, you are Division I.
You should be able to compete in Division I postseason events. Yes, it's total BS. And
you're competing in conference tournaments to qualify to get to postseason play.
It's icky. It's very icky. And the fact that Jacksonville State's going to be playing in their spot, even though they got beat in the semis of that conference tournament, is also very icky. I'm not a fan of that either. So in the spirit of Darren Donick and Chase's Friday segments at noon call, you just made the list. The NCAA and the Atlantic Sun are on
the list. You made the list.
The conference is compliant too. I'm not letting them off the hook either. So they're definitely on the list.
For 5 years, you need a transition period. You're on the list.
The whole conference needs a transition period of getting out of my life after this stupid rule. But coming up next, it's the best part of the show, a conference championship and semifinal edition of Give and Go. We're going to give you some gambling picks. We're going to help you win some money this weekend. That's coming up next here on Courtside with Camel and Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Music. It is NCAA tournament time. It's the best theme in all of sports. And every time I hear it, I get just a rush of euphoria as we're listening to Courtside with Camel Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on the eve of Selection Sunday. And it's now time for us, as we do in the last segment of every show, is to give the people what they want. And the people this week definitely consist of our mothers who are listening on the radio right now.
Shout out, moms. Hi, Mom. No, you're both on the stream right now.
They're both on it right now. I've been informed that my mother is listening, and she is not an avid gambler, so she's absolutely listening right now. I'm going to win her some money, win your mom some money. You're going to win everyone's mom some money.
Listen, my stepdad's a big gambler, so I'm sure he's listening. We also know that Ricky better be listening, Mr. Music City Bets. Heard you told our program director to Moneyline Baylor. Sorry, Chase.
Moneyline made the list for that one. He has absolutely made the list for encouraging a Baylor money line. I can't blame him though. Baylor's would not have foreseen that coming. So we will go ahead and start our Give and Go Bet segment, and we will keep this. I'm trying to find the line. My computer is freezing up on me.
Which one do you need? You want to start with Kentucky, Tennessee?
100%. Yes, we'll start with Kentucky and Tennessee.
Okay, so Kentucky, Tennessee, going to be right here in Tampa today, 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central. For all you Nashvillians listening, Kentucky is favored by 2.5. A little surprising to me. I thought it would have been more a pick 'em, maybe favored by 1.5. So a little surprising to me, Elijah. This one is going to be essentially a pick 'em today for all of you bettors out there. If you are going to place bets on this game, listen, go with your gut, I guess. I mean, yeah, I'm taking
evenly matched teams.
Very evenly matched teams. It really could go either way. I would take Kentucky minus the 2.5, but Elijah, are you giving or going that one? We'll give them to you, whether you go and place them.
I'm going and placing that one. I like Kentucky to win by 6 today, if I'm going to put an actual number on it, because I think Kentucky is going to do the one thing that Tennessee does well on defense, they're going to do on offense. That's take care of the ball. They're not going to succumb to a lot of turnovers that Tennessee forces mediocre offensive teams into. I also just trust Kentucky to be able to make more shots down the stretch. Tennessee's fatal flaw on offense is that they are the worst two-point shooting team in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Kentucky is a really good two-point defense. Tennessee's going to be forced to make a ton of threes. I don't think they hit enough. I think Oscar Tshiebwe helps maximize the value on all the possessions. I like Kentucky minus the 2.5.
Okay, Elijah, let's do the other SEC game that will be playing for the championship tomorrow. We've got Texas A&M, Arkansas. Texas A&M just upset Auburn yesterday. Arkansas is favored by 6 points. Arkansas -6 over Texas A&M. That is a big game. Texas A&M has been playing for their lives these last couple games. What do we think? I personally think I would take Texas A&M +6. Only because, you know, they're in a roll. They've been playing these last couple games in the tournament. They're feeling good. They're feeling confident. The momentum leading in. At this point, you're so far late in the game. Obviously, you want to look at caliber of team. Obviously, yes. Arkansas is the better team.
Very much so.
On paper, resume, they are the better team. But when we get into postseason, you do have to take into account neither team's going to have a big fan base there. Usually aren't too big for basketball. It's going to be primarily Tennessee and Kentucky fans there today waiting for the second game.
Right.
But 6 is a lot. 6 is a big line for a game that weighs a lot. And Texas A&M, if they could make a run, then that's resume building for them. Mm-hmm. They're not going to make the tournament, NIT, or to try to win the SEC.
Yeah, A&M needs it. A&M's the desperate team. And that's kind of why, like, I took Texas A&M +9.5 yesterday against Auburn.
That's a good one.
And I just knew, like, Auburn wasn't going to blow them away. And I think that might be the same thing with Arkansas here. Arkansas is really good defensively, not fantastic offensively. They have some offensive flaws. They're a lot like Tennessee in that regard. I like Texas A&M to keep it close. I'll go with the +6 as well. The first number I saw going into today was +5.5. But I would have taken Arkansas. I don't know. The lower the number goes, like, I think Arkansas is going to win the game. They're the better team. But I have some bad beat city feeling here towards the end of the game where Texas A&M might hit a 3 to cut it to 6 or something like that.
Elijah, this one's going to be a lock for me. We're going to switch over to a little Big Ten. Michigan. What?
Oh, no. Yeah. Last one.
Oh, last one. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Really quick. Michigan State is the underdog by 6.5. Purdue is favored by 6.5 over them. Give me Michigan State. Lock it down. I trust the Tom Izzo team in postseason.
Love the guarantee sounder right there. And my lock, I'm going to go and say it, Mountain West, Boise State, 2.5-point underdogs. I like Boise State to win outright. Give me the Broncos. Lock it in. Good enough offensively to win this game in the 50s, so I like Boise State to be my lock.
Yeah!
In the Mountain West. And as you hear Charles Barkley, that's a guarantee. And one thing I can guarantee as well is that Nashville Predators, St. Louis Blues pregame coming up next with Darren McFarland. You've been listening to Courtside with Kamel Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.